The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. We are back with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire, our regularly scheduled time, 7 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. We are back for the second time this weekend talking about the best hard rock and heavy metal. We are talking about the music of April the 11th this week. Really excited to get to some more new music, some more really awesome music this week on the Hard Rock Empire. And if you haven't checked out yesterday's episode, you can still do that. Of course, it is available on demand on both Twitch and on YouTube. So definitely check that out. It was a really good episode we had last night. And I think we've got another really good episode. We got some more great news stories. And of course, we've got some more great music for you coming up on the Hard Rock Empire. Joining me in studio, as always, is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. Really good week this week. Kind of feels like a shorter week because we kind of had two of them jammed together. But the amount of just quality music for the 11th was really impressive. And I'm going to have some difficulty, I think, pulling a couple additional songs for the inevitable YouTube short. But I look forward to trying to figure out what I want to choose for that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to choose from. And again, when we get to the new music, as we do each and every time we do this, I will post the playlist that Mike has put together, and I definitely encourage people to go through there. There's definitely more good acts on this playlist, I think, than the ones we have chosen, but in the end, we do have to narrow it down to four, so I think we've done a really good job of doing that, but at the same time, I think there's really a lot of good stuff on there, so definitely check that out when we post that playlist coming up in a little bit. We got news headlines to get to first, and it was a little bit of a challenge to find six unique news stories for a 24-hour period, but we were able to do that. And we're going to start off with an album that just kind of got my attention just because of some of the names involved in it. And it's news from Blabbermouth that original Kiss drummer Peter Criss is going to be releasing a rock solo album coming up in the fall. It'll be produced or co-produced by Barry Pointer. And he will be joined by Billy Sheehan and Matthew Montgomery and John Five, Mike McLaughlin, and Paul Schaefer, of all people. And those of you who might be a little bit older and remember Late Night with David Letterman and The Late Show with David Letterman, remember Paul Schaefer as his band leader. And, you know, he's a guy that's an incredibly talented musician, and maybe you just don't see him show up as often on rock albums, but yes, he's indeed going to join in on this album. And yeah, really interested to see what this sounds like. A lot of really good people involved in it, so I think there's some potential for this to be pretty good.
Yeah, I always interested to hear Paul Schaefer participating in what is just a popular music release. Obviously Billy Sheehan, John Five, both legends, so always interested in work they're doing. I'm kind of surprised that not just Peter Criss, but just all the members of Kiss or former members of Kiss, that they haven't done more music just in general over the years. When you look at his discography, it's, you know, he was kind of out of Kiss by 1980 and did a couple things, but nothing really regular or, you know, large scale. It felt like I think that's kind of weird. And obviously Kiss is, with the remaining members, have kind of been in and out of retirement numerous times and have released a couple albums. But, you know, even if you don't plan on touring anymore, you're kind of surprised they didn't write more music just in general. And certainly that's the case for Peter Criss as well.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. I mean, like you said, he's been out of the group for a long time. And you would think that, you know, we see it all the time. These guys leave big bands and they go on to do their own thing, even if it doesn't turn out to be maybe as popular as the band they came from. They usually kind of stay involved in music, and he's one that for whatever reason didn't do that to maybe the same degree that some other musicians have. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent on this album. And, you know, if I didn't know better, I would think Frontiers was backing this because it feels like something that they would get behind. But, you know, you just think that there is an appetite right now, and we see it on these podcast every week, that there's a lot of classic rock being made, whether it's made by guys who have made a ton of classic rock like these guys, or younger guys that are going back and making music that sounds like music that came from the 70s and 80s. And, you know, I think if there was ever a time to put together a venture like this, this is probably the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of funny because I feel like for so many years, Peter Criss was kind of like the maligned member of Kiss, whether it was being made fun of on Family Guy or just kind of in general. Like when people talk about the drummers that have played for Kiss, he always kind of seems like, despite being the original, kind of like the other guy. Like it's kind of unfortunate, but yeah, I'm kind of anxiously awaiting to hear what this sounds like, just given the star power. And again, having Paul Schaefer involved just seems really wild.
Yeah, a guy who's clearly very creative. So I'm curious to see kind of what his role is in this. And they're talking about a fall release for this album. So I'm sure that it will come across our desk again as we get a little bit closer to the fall and when this comes out. And we'll certainly let you know when we start hearing some tracks from it. And we'll certainly take a look at it once it is released, but definitely a kind of an interesting album that will be coming up and a lot of big names involved. Speaking of big names and classic rock legends, more news this week on that front as Alice Cooper reuniting with former bandmates for their first album in 51 years, The Revenge of Alice Cooper. This feels like something that's a long time coming, and it's great to see that it is actually happening. And I know you've had a chance to listen to a track off of that, I believe. And I'm just curious to get your thoughts, because this to me is really cool that they're actually doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of feels like in the past several years, Alice Cooper and his solo work has kind of started veering a little closer to classic Alice Cooper in general. You know, he is right up there with Ozzy as far as people who have been able to kind of sell out and reinvent themselves numerous times over and get away with it without any real repercussions. They can bring in writers and nobody seems to mind, and it's worked well for them. But yeah, I listened to the first single that's popped off from this. Was it Black Mamba, I believe, was the name of it?
Yes.
And I mean, it sounds like what you'd expect from the Alice Cooper band. Not Alice Cooper, the solo artist, but the actual band Alice Cooper. It feels very 70s rock, maybe even a little psychedelic in times. But yeah, it's really cool. They basically brought in all the living members of the band. So you have obviously Alice on vocals, Michael Bruce on guitar, Dennis Dunaway on bass, Neil Smith on drums. They even actually, Glenn Buxton, one of the other guitarists, passed away in 1997. But they actually have a riff that he wrote with Dunaway that they were able to take and use for the new album. So even the classic guitarist who's been dead since, you know, what, almost 30 years now?
Yeah.
They were able to incorporate sounds that he created for the album. So obviously that's really cool too. You know, I read the comments under the YouTube video, and a lot of people are excited about it just because it feels like a return to form, kind of before Alice was a person and Alice was just a band.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely an appetite for it. I think if you're someone maybe more like me who, when I think of Alice Cooper, the stuff I enjoy is more kind of the hair metal Alice Cooper or new metal Alice Cooper from the 80s and 90s, early 2000s. Maybe it's not necessarily your cup of tea, but really cool that so many members are still able to participate in this and they're able to still do this while they can.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I just kind of, someone who has just found a way, as you mentioned, to just continue to be relevant all these years. And I go back to a friend of mine that I went to when I went back to school at NKU back in the middle of the last decade, a friend of mine who we occasionally run into at anime conventions was a huge fan of Alice Cooper. And it's like, you know, this is clearly a younger generation of people who are still getting into Alice Cooper all these years later. And that is refreshing in a lot of ways, considering how much music out there maybe isn't my favorite that is popular, but it's great to see that great music does last. And, you know, I am really curious to see what this album's going to sound like. I think you're right. You know, based on that first track, I think you kind of get the feeling it is going to be a return to that early 1970s sound that the band had in their first few albums before they split up and kind of went on their own ways.
I think there's something kind of timeless about Alice Cooper, the performer. I think even if you're not necessarily a huge fan of 70s rock or hair metal or what he's done throughout his career, when you look at like how many tours he's done with Rob Zombie, it's like they put on this kind of show that I think will draw people in who maybe you come for the show, but you find out you actually really like the music. I think that there's something that's always relevant about that you're going to be able to get people from any generation to, you know, maybe they were influenced by older siblings or parents, but they see the imagery, they hear the music, and it just kind of works no matter how old you are.
I think Alice Cooper's done a really good job of doing the festival tours as well. Yeah. You know, has been a semi-regular up at Sonic Temple, has done a lot of the other big tours where it's like maybe a younger person's not necessarily going to see Alice Cooper. You know, I think of the one time you saw ZZ Top at one of those festivals. And maybe
Rock
not
on the Range.
Yeah, right, Rock on the Range. And maybe not a band you would have signed up to go see otherwise, but I remember you saying that they were really good. And I think there was probably a lot of people that saw Alice Cooper for the first time in this current generation the same way. And they're like, oh, well, this is really awesome. I need to actually check all this stuff out.
Yeah, I would agree. I think back to that Rock on the Range and, you know, ZZ Top is the headliner. It's like I saw them along with Evanescence, Velvet Revolver, Hinder, a bunch of other bands. But, you know, the ZZ Top part really just I was not expecting them to rock as hard as they did.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that those bands are still out there and really excited for this album from Alice Cooper, the band. And we'll see what that sounds like. It is coming out on July 25th. So, again, we will certainly talk more about that as we move forward. Last news item is kind of a two-parter, kind of a little bit of news and a little bit of commentary. And you know, we do tend to find these on Blabbermouth and Metal Injection, which are kind of our main sources of music. But it was the news that, you know, it obviously we knew that Bad Company was one of the bands that has been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The article on Blabbermouth kind of makes it sound like the band has been tipped off that they may be selected. It sounds like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame selections will be coming up in the next week or so. So we should find out who's going to get in. And I know, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a divisive topic because of what they've chosen. But for the bands that do get in, it is still a big deal. And, you know, I think the one thing about this article is there's a lot of bands mentioned in the article that also should be getting nominated, but still haven't. And I think it just continues to have those hard feelings, but it'll be interesting to see who ends up getting selected when those announcements are made, I believe this week.
Yeah. I think kind of the key takeaways from the story, and they mention it, is like Bad Company hadn't been nominated up until this point.
Yeah.
That seems really insane to me. You know, they mentioned the band Free, who also is not in the Hall of Fame. And the story that, Simon Kirk talks about talking to Nico McBrain from Iron Maiden, how they had been nominated 11 times and didn't get in, to the point where they basically just told the hall, like, hey, stop nominating us. Like, this is stupid. Like, what are we doing? And I think that's always going to be the problem, is that you called yourself the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think so many of the issues that we're running into is just because of the naming of it. If you just called it the Popular Music Hall of Fame, then I would understand so many of the non-rock, non-metal bands getting in, or musical acts getting in that don't fit the moniker rock and roll.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be such a big deal when you're talking about some of the exclusions. I mean, you could come up with just an endless list of bands that certainly deserve the recognition. Bad Company is obviously one of them. It's just funny when you read the story and they talk about how, as far as the fan voting goes to get them in, it's like they're right behind Fish.
Yes.
You're just like, I understand Fish has a following, but we're talking Bad Company. Like, what? Yeah. What are we doing?
I get that Fish is another one of those bands that has their loyal fan base that has probably gone nuts about trying to get out there and vote for them. I just wonder if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame needs to maybe adopt the baseball mindset of how they go about it, where you have X number of years where you're on the ballot, and then once you're not eligible to be on the ballot anymore, you basically have like a veterans committee. And you can basically, you know, you take Eddie Trunk, take other, and you can even do it across multiple genres, have like a rock committee, a hip hop committee, and they get to vote one band in every year, just basically a band that's been overlooked for whatever reason, so that you can honor these bands. Because the bottom line is, because of the requirements, was it 25 years from your first album, I think, is when you're first eligible, or something like that.
Yeah, that is correct.
So, you know, if you assume that these guys, let's say they're getting started in their mid-20s, so that puts them at about 50 years old when they're first eligible. If you're on the ballot for 11 years and don't get in, now you're in your 60s. You know, at some point, the guys aren't going to be around anymore. This is rock and roll. They live the rock and roll lifestyle. A lot of those guys don't make it to 60. So you're missing an opportunity to honor these bands while these guys are still around. Like, why are we doing this? Like, who cares? I mean, I think baseball people get worked up too about, oh, it's going to be the Hall of Very Good. It's like, you know, there are a billion baseball players. If we put somebody in that had a, you know, had 250 home runs or, you know, whatever, like the world's going to keep spinning. Yeah. Like, you know, if you, for everybody you have put in, if you put in a band maybe a little bit before they should have gone in or what, you know what, that's fine. But let's not leave these bands out. For what it is, like, let's honor these guys while they're still here to be honored.
Well, eventually you're going to run into the issue that fans of the band will no longer be around to vote or to visit the hall to see what, like, yeah, memorabilia and whatnot they actually have from those bands. Yeah. It'll be like going in there and seeing, like, turn of the century
to museum.
It's like, oh, that's great, but I don't know what any of this is.
Yeah. I mean, it's no longer an active museum. It's a historical museum. And you're just, oh, well, that, because, I mean, we went to the Hall of Fame. We need to get back up there again. It is definitely,
it's cool.
All things being equal, it is a trip that every music fan should make. But I mean, there
not
was
sure why they put it in Cleveland, but whatever.
Cleveland's an interesting place. I think they're actually building an addition to it, if I remember reading somewhere correctly. But it is a really cool place right off of Lake Erie. So it's kind of a neat place to go. But yeah, it's just strange what the decisions they've made on it. And yeah, Bad Company should be in as well.
At least with the Baseball Hall of Fame, they're not inducting cricket players or football players.
Yeah.
I feel like with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that's what you're looking at. It's like, yeah, that guy was a really good football player, but he was a football player.
Like, well, what if he was a baseball player?
Like, yeah. What if he played rock and roll music? All right, whatever.
Yeah, it's a little strange, but yeah, we'll find out. And goodness knows, we'll probably talk about it when they announce the nominations on this podcast, because it'll certainly be worthy of being talked about. Which I guess is good for content, so we'll just run.
That's what it's all about these days.
It's all about content. Lots of good stuff. But that takes care of news headlines. Don't forget to check out our website, nerdcastempire.com. Don't forget to check out our social media. We're across social media, pretty much at Nerdcast Empire. If you type in Nerdcast Empire, you're going to get there. We will be back Saturday morning, this coming Saturday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern, with another episode of the Nerdcast News Report. We've had a little bit of a hiatus just because of work and life, but we'll be back on Saturday. We have a lot of ground to cover as we will get to some updated news headlines. And then, of course, a week from tonight, we'll be back for another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. We'll be talking the music of April the 18th coming up next week. So looking forward to that. So join us almost every Sunday night. We do have another hiatus coming up. We have another Sunday where we will not be on the air due to Sonic Temple coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll probably double stack another episode the following week, like we did this weekend. We'll do Saturday, Sunday the following week. But we'll let you know before we do that. That'll be coming up soon. But it is time again for the second night in a row to get to some of the best rock and metal in all of rock and roll. And of course, if I go through the spiel every time, I think you know the routine if you're a regular listener. But if not, we'll just kind of go over it. Obviously, we pick a date, and the date in question in this case is April the 11th. Mike will go through and he will find a list of all the new rock and metal releases and compile them. And then we'll take and find a track off of each one of those albums, as long as he can find those, and put them on a playlist. And that playlist will be pasted into the chats here in just a moment. And when those playlists are there, I encourage you to check them out, because there's a lot of really good stuff on there, stuff that we can't pick everybody. You know, we only have two picks a week. We do tend to stay away from the biggest bands unless it's just a week where it's just so thin that we just have no other choice. But you know, we do like to spotlight kind of smaller bands, or maybe bands you haven't heard of, and kind of put them on this podcast. So we each pick two and then we bring them to you. And that is how we handle all these new music picks each and every week. And again, Mike, as Mike said, there's a really good week in music. And I think you'll find something you really like if you go through that playlist, in addition to the four bands that we're going to talk about on the podcast. But it is time to get to the new music once again for April the 11th. And Mike, we'll let you kick things off as always.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff this week for sure. My first pick is actually going to be the 12th full-length studio album from an Italian folk metal band. The band in question is Elven King, and this is their newest, Reader of the Runes, Luna.
Yeah, I feel like that's a band I've heard of, and that's not always the case on this podcast, but when I saw that name on the list, I feel like that we have come across them before. But That's another great release from these guys.
Yeah, it's hard to say, because whenever you talk about any name that involves kind of high fantasy elements, you're like, wait, have I heard that before? But there are probably any number of bands True. That have some sort of elven or elvish elf name to them. But yeah, I mean, these guys have been around for quite a while. This album itself is actually part three of a trilogy that began in 2019 with Reader of the Runes Divination, followed by 2023's Reader of the Runes Rapture. The band is made up of Lethian on violins, Simone on drums, Domna on vocals, Headmot on guitars, Aiden on guitars, and Jakob on bass. Yeah, they've been active since 1997, so they've been out there for quite a while. And, you know, I kind of feel bad jumping into what's a trilogy of albums on part three, having not heard the first two. But, you know, I think about it, like, the first Harry Potter movie I watched was the sixth one out of eight. So, you know, and that probably actually helped me enjoy the earlier films. Maybe that's going to be the case with this. This is just 10 tracks of really cool folk slash power metal, leaning heavily on the folk side of it. On their Wikipedia, they actually mentioned the guitarist was quoted as saying, you know, their influences come from all over the metal scene, and obviously a lot of folk music and dances from all over the world. For the metal side, they mention some of the bands that are influences on them, including Skyclad, Blind Guardian, In Flame, Soilwork, Helloween, Merciful Fate / King Diamond, Annihilator, Cradle of Filth, and Dark Tranquility. So pretty much all across the spectrum of kind of your power metal to melodic death metal, black metal thrown in as well, thrash. Can't go wrong with any of that. Like I mentioned, a lot of folksy elements to this album, which it's kind of cool, especially considering the other choice I had for this week is very much not like that. It is straight up power metal. As you go through the tracks, you know, a lot of them are very, very folksy, but then you have something like, what was the track? On These Haunted Shores, which is just straight up heavy from the word go. You have the track Storm Carrier, which features Matthias Lillmans on vocals along with the lead singer of the band. I'm guessing he's the one that provides kind of the harsh vocals, because you don't get them on every song and they're very prominent on Storm Carrier, but that's still a really cool thing. Yeah, I mentioned before, anytime you have any kind of like high fantasy classical sounding music that fits in with the metal, I'm always a fan of that, and you definitely get a lot of that here. Standout tracks on the album include Season of the Owl, Gone Epoch, Storm Carrier, Throes of Atonement, Reader of the Runes, Book 2, and the track that I picked to listen to tonight, the song Luna.
And just a reminder, the best place to hear the tracks live is to actually be with us on Sunday nights. That's the one place you're guaranteed to get them through. The VODs on Twitch and YouTube often let the songs get through, so you're usually good there. If you're listening on your favorite podcast network, we don't include the tracks on there due to copyright issues. But just a reminder, join us live, and that's the one place you are guaranteed to get to hear the music tracks. Yeah, good stuff from these guys. Really enjoyed the track on the playlist. It was one that I had marked for a re-listen, and end up not getting back around to the whole album, but I definitely would like to check it out. But yeah, I mean, they've got a great sound, and it does make you kind of curious what the other two albums sound like as well, to be able to get the full picture of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to go back and check them out, as I seem to be picking kind of concept albums lately, and I need to keep up with the story.
Yeah, for sure. We're always down for concept albums. If you got a good story, it makes it even more enjoyable. So check out Elven King and the third of a three album trilogy this week, and then go back and check out the other two albums as well. As always, you have two picks each and every week. What do you have for pick number two?
Yeah, so for pick number two, it's kind of funny because I feel like these guys are kind of the opposite, but kind of in the same subgenre where they're very power metal, but they are leaning a lot more into the metal as opposed to any kind of fantasy or I guess, for lack of a better term, gimmick with their music. This is the fourth full-length studio album from a multinational band, German and Swedish. They're a melodic power metal band. They are Mentalist, and their newest album is Earthbreaker.
Yeah, is another one I had marked as well. And definitely want to get back and listen to this whole album, but really good stuff from these guys.
Yeah, so this is the follow-up to their 2022 album, Empires Falling. They've been around since 2018. Band consists of Florian Hertel on bass, Toman Stouch on drums, Kai Stringer on guitars, Peter Moog on guitars, and Rob Lundgren on vocals. Looking at the member listing on the Metal Archives, one thing you notice is that the majority of this band has extensive experience over a multitude of other bands, not to mention this being the fourth album as Mentalist. So the album just sounds really tight, which is kind of what you'd expect from guys who've been in the industry for as long as they have. I mentioned Elvin King's heavy folk influences on their album. Mentalist is definitely more power metal, with a touch of kind of neoclassical flair. It kind of sounds like Symphony X at times when you listen to it, which is never a bad thing. It's fast. It's got some ridiculous solos. You know, when trying to think of other ways to describe what their sound was, I started looking up reviews, and I found one from metalrules.com, which I think explains it pretty well, if not maybe in a way that's demeaning to other bands. They said, Earthbreaker is perhaps remarkable for what it does not include. It does not have a gimmick, superhero costumes, novelty cover tunes, female singers or orchestras, or goofy lyrics about dinosaurs, ninjas, pirates, or Vikings. Mentalist plays straight up full-on metal, not unlike perhaps Persuader, Savage Circus, or Fraternia. It's almost refreshing these days. And yeah, that's kind of how I'd put it. Like, it's very much just Symphony X-style power metal, really great vocals, blistering solos. It's not trying to find some niche somewhere else. It knows what it is, and it does it really well. Standout tracks on the album include March on Legionnaire, Lord of the Wasteland, Monkey King, Together as One, and the track that I picked to listen to, the title track, Earthbreaker.
Yeah, I definitely see the comparisons to Symphony X. There's definitely a style that is very similar. They're clearly going for the same concept of what their sound sounds like, and it sounds great. And I think that's exactly what you want in power metal. They're not fooling around or getting right to the point. It's not too far out there. It's not so fast and loud that you can't get into it. Like, very accessible power metal. And because of that, I think they've really done a good job of this album.
Yeah. If you told me Michael Romeo and Russell Allen were somehow a part of this, I would probably believe it just based on listening to it. But no, I mean, it's just a really good power metal album. You know, another good album from the Pride and Joy record label. And kind of going back to that review from metalrules.com, I will point out that I don't mind when bands have some of the things that they mentioned that Mentalist doesn't include. They could even have all of them and it would be fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, every now and then it is cool just to hear straight up power metal. And that's kind of what you're getting here.
Yeah, I'm all for that. You know, some of those other things are really awesome. For
dinosaurs and ninjas for and Vikings. Sure.
If you can work them in the same band, that's even better. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're not fooling around, and I think it comes across in their music. So definitely check out Mentalist. Really good choice for this week. I have two picks as well this week, and I will say I feel like these picks are both a little bit off the beaten path for what I typically pick on these, but I really enjoyed both of these albums, so I wanted to get a chance to give these a spotlight. The first album is an Italian alternative gothic rock band. They are Tears Heaven, and the album is Godfall. First off, as we tend to have happen occasionally on this podcast, on a band name or an album name can cause problems with finding information because it's too close to something else. And when you look up Tears Heaven, you get Tears in Heaven. And I do know all about the Eric Clapton song, have a lot of respect for it, but probably could be a legitimate choice for our power trio today if you want to get right down to it.
I actually
didn't think of that for that until right this second, But this is not that. I was only able to find a couple articles on these guys, so my apologies to these guys, and I have a little more background information, but I am interested to learn more about them because they've really done a great job with this album. The note I saw was they are led by the enigmatic personas of Atlas Heaven, Jericho, Legion, and the Priest. So that is these guys. Tears Heaven weaves a sonic narrative infused with Anglo-Swedish alternative rock influences, inspired by acts like Ghost, Magna Carta, Cartel, White Lies, and Editors. I will admit I've only heard of Ghost out of those four bands, but you know, maybe I need to check out the other three bands. It's melodic rock, but not AOR melodic rock that I typically pick on this podcast. It is melodic in the way that it's just kind of smooth. If there is a genre called like smooth metal, I feel like these guys kind of nailed that. It's not that they didn't rock. They do. But the album is just very smooth and easy to get through. They had some tracks on there that were interlude instrumental tracks, like the opener Requiem for the Fallen, and then coming back in track six with Exilium. It's just a really nice kind of break. And then you get back into the rock music. But these guys, they put together a really awesome album. And like I said, kind of hard to find a ton of information about these guys, but I would definitely like to know more because this was really good. I'm excited to see where this band goes from here. Standout tracks include Godfall, Celestial, Lumina, and the song we're going to listen to for the podcast is Conviction. But yeah, just a really smooth metal. I mean, just like melodic, but not necessarily an AOR type melodic. It was really enjoyable. It's a very easy listen, 44 minutes for 12 songs. So you get through it pretty quickly, but definitely interested in knowing more about this group. Get a website up, try to get some little more information that I can find. Cause this was really good stuff. Mike, your thoughts on these guys.
Yeah, they were one of many acts from this week that I thought were different, but I wanted to hear more. They were close to something I would typically listen to, but not being dead on. And I think that's always exciting. Just add them to the list of several CD or several albums that I still need to take in fully from this week to get caught up. But yeah, really good stuff. And I'm also curious who names their band Editors.
Yeah, that's one of the guys in the band. Was it?
That was one of the bands that they compared themselves to.
Yeah, you're right.
Who names their band Editors?
I mean, probably somebody whose English isn't their first language. Maybe, I would guess. Yeah. Like, you know,
that just stuck out to me.
Yeah, I need to know more about these bands. Maybe I should be making a list of like influence bands I've never heard of and use that for the vault at some point. Yeah. Where you're just finding these bands that influence these guys. But yeah, interesting album. I really enjoyed it. Definitely check out Tears Heaven, their album this week. Really good stuff from them. As always, I have two picks. Second pick, a little more along the lines of what I would typically pick. We're going to the United States for this one. As a heavy metal band out of Philadelphia, they're originally from New Jersey. They list Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on their Bandcamp page. Formed in 2003, this is High Council with the new album release, Cruel and Unusual. First off, these guys got a great look. If you check out their social media page, if you check out their videos, definitely kind of playing off the High Council type imagery. This is their second full length album, but they've also released five EPs dating back to 2005. So really have more gone the EP route. This is their second time they've actually gone full length. A little bit of new wave of traditional heavy metal with these guys. Also some epic doom metal and just some straight up heavy metal. The band is Bob Saunders on guitars and vocals, Steve Donahue on guitars and vocals, Lou DiDomenico DiDomenico on bass and keyboards, and Greg Wolfman Vegas McKeever on drums. Anytime you have a band that has elements of that folk style, Mike talked about it with one of his picks. You do want to make sure they don't get too far out there where it just gets kind of crazy. But these guys didn't do that. For every part that has kind of that folk undertone, they really have a metal bass underneath it, which I really felt like kept the thing just kind of grounded in metal, which is really good. A lot of wide range of sounds on this one as well. A great variety. And it made the album, again, really awesome to listen to. Definitely curious to hear more from these guys who have been around for a while. Another band that's been doing it for more than 20 years. But this is a really, really good release from them. Standout tracks include Cruel and Unusual, Liberator, Jackal. And the song that we're listening to on the podcast is Two From Whence. Yeah, that was one that I really enjoyed from the get-go. I felt like they really jumped in with that one. Definitely one of the harder tracks on the album. But just like I said, all the stuff sounds different on each track, which is really great. And that one is, like I said, I think probably their hardest track, but I just really like where they got that one started. And it's a really good track off of a really good album. But yeah, High Council, my second pick for this week. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought these guys really stood out as far as both their sound and for the playlist, the video that I picked for Cruel and Unusual, it just shows that they clearly don't take themselves too seriously, which I think is always a plus. But the video is really cool and just made me think, man, I need to check these guys out even more, which, you know, is kind of the point of the video. But yeah, just another band that really seems to be leaning into kind of that traditional heavy metal stuff. And I'm here for all of it, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. I love the fact we come across these bands that are doing new wave of traditional heavy metal. And these guys have done that and they've done it really well. So definitely check out High Council, my second pick for this week. That's all for the new music this week. It's time to get into the vault, where Mike and I will each go through a classic album you need to check out. Mike, as I mentioned yesterday, is literally going through his vault. He's going through albums that he owns. And of course, he has quite the extensive collection, and going letter by letter in the alphabet. And we are up to the letter I this week. And again, you know, maybe I, not as many choices, but a few good choices there. What do you have for the letter I?
Yeah, I think I is not a bad letter. There are a few bands that I have a decent collection of from that letter. The first time around going through the letter I picked an album from Iced Earth, their 2011 album Dystopia. Moving away from that, we are looking at an album from 2006 today. It is from the band In Flames, and it is their album Come Clarity.
Yeah, another classic band. We had him yesterday, and Iced Earth last time. You went through I, and now In Flames, and these guys are really good also.
Yeah, absolutely. This is their eighth studio album. They are, of course, the Swedish melodic death metal band. It was released on February 3rd, 2006. Before this album, I was aware of them, but I really hadn't given them much of a listen. Kind of prior to about 2005, 2006, I wasn't really someone who would give a chance to anything that had harsh vocals. That just wasn't really my style. It was around that time, between bands like In Flames and Cradle of Filth, that I kind of became a little more receptive. Bands like Trivium as well, where, you know, my appetite for some harsh vocals definitely expanded a bit. This album itself reached number one on both the Finnish and Swedish weekly charts. It charted on the U.S. Billboard Top 200, actually up to 16 on the U.S. Top Rock Albums Billboard chart, which is pretty impressive for In Flames. The band itself dates back to 1990, formed by Jesper Stromblad, and was one of the three bands that kind of pioneered Swedish melodic death metal, along with At the Gates and Dark Tranquility, who we've talked about before. Michael Staun from Dark Tranquility was actually even the lead vocalist for In Flames a few years, kind of in the early days from 93 to 95. So they all kind of coalesced at the same time together, but they, you know, definitely took that death metal and infused it with kind of that European melody sensibility that you hear in so many European bands, and created something that was just unique and a lot more palatable for someone who isn't into more of the extreme black or death metal stuff, which I would definitely say is the case with me. It helped too that I, around the time this album came out, I got to see them live, and that was a really cool experience. You know, one of the tracks from this album ended up being on Guitar Hero 3, which is never a bad gateway to build more fans. Obviously, we've seen bands like Dragon Force become kind of huge off of Guitar Hero. And, you know, anytime you get your song on a video game, that's never a bad thing. You know, it's another band that still is going on to this day, despite not having any original members left, although Bjorn Gallant and Anders Frieden have been around since 1995. So they're certainly tenured members, if not original. Standout tracks on the album include Take This Life, Leeches, Dead End, Come Clarity, Crawl Through Knives. I think if you're not necessarily into some of the more extreme metal, this is definitely kind of a good entry point, where you still get some clean vocals. You get a song like Dead End has a female vocal in it as well, which is really good. And you get the melody of the music, which is something that to me is necessary if you're going to do the harsh vocals, because you have to have something to kind of retain the musicality of the album. And I think In Flames, as well as bands like Dark Tranquility, they kind of nail that sound. And I would certainly recommend this to anybody.
Yeah, for sure. And first off, welcome, Chris. I'm glad you made it on Tiffy Time, as you've noted in your comment. You know, that's a big thing. I'm certainly not as much into the bands that do the harsh vocals as you are. But to me, and because of that, you know, having the melodic parts is critical for me to be able to get into this type of music. And I think it's where, because we listen to all this music every week, and there's so many bands that do just the harsh vocals, but then the music behind it is just noise. And it's like, how fast can you play the drums? What kind of sounds can you make the guitar make? And it's just, it just sounds like this jumbled mess. And again, that's clearly what they're going for. So yeah. Far be it for me to tell them what they should do. They're not making it for me. They're making it for people that enjoy that. But I'm never going to enjoy that kind of music. Like, you're going to have to find a way to get melodies into it to get me in the door. And I think, you know, bands like In Flames, bands like Dark Tranquility did a really good job of that, to bring that bassline melody into it so that the harsh vocals don't overpower the song. And sometimes with these new bands, it feels like a competition between the harsh vocalist and the rest of the band to try to see who can make the most grating sounds.
Yeah.
And this is instead a balance when you have that. And I think that's what everybody should be going for, is, you know, either you have harsh music and melodic vocals over the top, or you have harsh vocals with melodic music. But if you do both, it just doesn't work out. But these guys have always found a way to kind of walk that balance. And that's why they've had so much success in their career.
Yeah, absolutely.
A really enjoyable band. Definitely check these guys out. Definitely check this album out. Mike's Vault pick this week, In Flames and Come Clarity, from back in 2006. I am, of course, continuing through the vault. Through the Frontiers Vault, started a few weeks ago, going through letter by letter with the bands that have been represented at some point by Frontiers Records, because I pick so many of those bands week to week. And basically we're spending 2 weeks on each letter. I'm picking a band first week, the second week I'm putting the remainder of the bands with that letter from Wikipedia into the randomizer, and then having it spit out a band. I'll be honest, this was the second pick from the randomizer this week, because the first one was a band I could not find any information on, could not find an album on their streaming. So we had to punt that one and we went to this one. This is a progressive heavy metal rock band from Stockholm, Sweden, formed in 2008. It is Crash the System. And this is their one and only album. Unfortunately, The Crowning, they came out in 2009. They were signed to Frontiers. There is a press release, if you can find it online. The best part about the press release is the addresses at the end of the press release are to MySpace. Instead of the website, there's a website, but there's also MySpace links, which is always really cool. And just a reminder that MySpace was kind of still around there in 2009. And
yeah.
That's clearly where Frontiers was releasing their music. So that's kind of wild. This is their one and only album under Frontiers. I don't know if they've gone on to do other stuff. Not that I can tell. This is a project that came together as a collaboration between songwriter Soren Kronquist and drummer producer Daniel Flores back in the fall of 2008. And as so often is the case with Frontiers, they find a band. They're like, hey, what if we give you three or four of our vocalists to sing on this? And that's what they've done. You have Goran Edman, who we've talked about many times on this podcast, of course, with Brazen Abbott. He used to be with Yngwie Malmsteen. You have Mats Levin, who was also with Yngwie Malmsteen, also with Infinite Mass. Thomas Vikström, Talk of the Town and Candlemass. And Bjorn Janssen with Ride the Sky and Tears of Anger. So, yeah, I mean, they bring in those vocalists to these talented guys. Really, really good stuff. The album is really good. You definitely get the 80s vibe. That's clearly what they were going for here. It's 45 minutes for 13 songs, so you just get through it really fast. It's feels like, and we don't know exactly what the business model is for Frontiers, but it feels like they at times have just basically put these bands together and then they release an album and it either takes off or it doesn't. And, you know, then they just, if it doesn't really take off, they just go their separate ways and they go to work on something else. And it kind of feels like maybe that's what the situation was here. Again, really good album. Definitely encourage you to check it out. You can still find it streaming, which is great. But, as far as I know, no new music from these guys, although they do still have a Facebook page. So maybe there's hope someday that they will release something new. Their MySpace page is also still up.
Just add them to your top eight on MySpace, and who knows, maybe something big will happen.
Maybe something big will happen. Standout tracks include Fight Fire with Fire, All Because of You, Mysterious, and Enough of Your Lovin'. But honestly, this is such an easy listen because it is just melodic metal for 45 minutes. You can't go wrong. If you like this type of music, you're going to dig this album. But it is, you know, really more so than asking your opinion on these guys is just the Frontiers model. Like, and I have a feeling this is not the last time we're going to see this situation where you have a band that was basically put together for one, maybe two albums, and then they just kind of disappear because that was, they served their purpose and then they just kind of moved on.
Yeah. I kind of wonder how that works because, you know, we've seen in the past where they have like one or two kind of like house writers that do a bunch of albums with them. And I just wonder if that's the case where they just contract one person or two people. And it's like, okay, here's the budget. Go find guest musicians to fill out the ranks. You can do the writing, you can do the producing, all the other elements of it, and we're gonna have an album. And you know, maybe earlier on when they didn't have the depth of roster that they have now with the bands they have signed, maybe that's just a way to get more material out there and kind of get your business up and running. But yeah, it's wild. But for whatever reason, typically, anytime they do this, it still turns out really well. The music's great. So what can you say?
And we're grateful for those bands because they fill out a lot of our podcasts because they're always releasing good stuff and we always spotlight it. So
I'm glad you mentioned Brazen Abbott because I was trying to think of what band you picked for like the random letter B for the vault.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what was that band? Like Baron Corbin or something? Like what? Who were they? And I couldn't think of their name. And yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. And then of course they've come up just on our regular, our podcast as well, yeah. Even outside of like the random letters, but, letter D next week, I'll be curious to see, what the options are there. And, you know, I'll be able to pick one, that'll be next week. And then the fall, when we come back in a couple of weeks, we'll have the randomizer choose one, but, fun stuff, really enjoyable album. Definitely check those guys out and maybe they'll come back someday. Who knows? But, that is, Crash the System, my pick. For the vault. It is time to get to the Power Trio, and we are going to get to today's question, which today's question is a kind of an interesting one because so often we talk about, oh, that song's overrated, this song's overplayed, but so often when we talk about those sorts of things, they're songs we don't really care for.
Yeah.
So there's a very wide range of songs that are overrated and overplayed that we don't like, and that's generally what makes that emotion, you know, come to the forefront. But the Power Trio question for this week is naming three songs that are overrated / overplayed that you actually do enjoy, that you would admit are good songs. And that to me kind of narrows the field down a little bit because you're talking about music that you would probably still listen to, but you would also admit that, man, like there's probably other songs, which that kind of gets into my, you know, my idea for the Power Trio next week is kind of like a deep cuts type of question where you have bands that are known for big songs, but that's not the song you need to listen to from this band. It is this instead. Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of this question, and we're gonna tackle that one next week. But we're on to overrated stuff. Chris has already provided his, so you want to start with what he has given us.
Yeah, and we actually do have an overlap now between Chris and Shane, which, you know, given the song, not really surprising.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for Chris's picks, we're looking at number one, Eagles, Hotel California. Outstanding song, but yeah, I would definitely say it is kind of beat to death.
Yeah, and I love Hotel California. I think the guitar solo at the end of that is really top notch. I had planned on picking that, but I was sure somebody else was going to pick that, so I did punt on that one. But I love Hotel. I will listen to it if it comes on, but there's no question that Eagles have a dozen or more better songs than Hotel California.
Yeah. And when I was doing my picks, that was kind of for a couple of mine. That was something I was thinking about, was like, that song is grossly overplayed. Why don't they play this song and think of another song off the album?
Yeah.
For my number one pick, that was kind of the obvious direction I was going with it. But you think of like the Hotel California album, so many great tracks, New Kid in Town, Life in the Fast Lane, Wasted Time, Victim of Love, Pretty Maids All in a Row, Last Resort. Like,
that's an amazing album.
Yeah, like, it really is.
That album is as underrated as Hotel California is overrated.
Yeah.
Like, Wasted Time has always been one of my all-time favorite Eagles songs. It's right there with Last Resort. I mean, that's two of my favorite Eagles songs on the same album.
Great, great songs.
But yeah, Hotel California, can't argue with that pick. That's pick number one.
So his number two pick is The Overlap. Okay. We have Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody off of Night at the Opera from 1975.
I mean, there's another album that, you know, when you talk about great albums that have great tracks, yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody, obviously, I'm curious. Like, was there an inflection point with that song with Wayne's World? Would that song have been as overplayed, as overrated? Because it felt like Wayne's World brought that song back into the popular sphere,
yeah,
and really took it to another level as far as being played on classic rock radio.
I think Wayne's World made it for something that you didn't think about back then. It made it meme worthy.
Yeah,
I think it just, it gave you this visual of them headbanging in the Mirthmobile. And I think that gave it legs that, and I'm sure it probably recharted when Wayne's World came out. Cause I mean, we're talking about a song that when Wayne's World came out, what, probably 1990, the song was already 15 years old. Like, it definitely gave it new legs for sure. But, and again, it's an amazing song. But man, you look at Night at the Opera and think of some of the other tracks from that album.
Yeah,
it's a great album top to bottom. But I mean, Death on Two Legs, Lazing on Sunday Afternoon, Love of My Car, You're My Best Friend, 39, Prophet Song, Good Company. Just a lot of tremendous songs on that album.
Good Company has always been one of my favorites because it's so different than so much of the other stuff they did. It feels like it's dropped out of another time and place. And obviously, that's a Brian May song.
See, I feel the same way about a song like 39, yes, which is also a Brian May song.
And maybe that's why. Maybe Brian May has such a different vocal style, different musical style.
Yeah. I'm In Love With My Car, Roger Taylor.
Yeah.
Totally different sounding.
For sure. That's a great album. And again, Bohemian Rhapsody is great, but I would 100% agree it is overplayed.
And his third pick, I would agree with as well. We have Skid Row with the song 18 and Life off of their self-titled debut from 1989. Skid Row has a lot of great songs, and that self-titled album was great, but it did kind of lack the teeth that they developed on their follow-up Slave to the Grind.
Yeah.
And it's funny, a lot of people lately have been really talking about Subhuman Race and kind of giving it a lot more props than it got when it first came out, which that was certainly heavier, but started trying to maybe drift more into like an alternative or grungier space. Ultimately, I think as far as hard rock metal album, Slave to the Grind is their best work. But yeah, the self-titled 18 to Life is a great song. Obviously, I would maybe argue that I Remember You might also be overplayed and overrated, because that one was certainly a huge hit as well. Some of the tracks off that album, though, that I think were really good and maybe didn't get the love they deserved. Big Guns, Can't Stand the Heartache's a great song.
That's a great song.
Piece of Me. Here I Am, Midnight Tornado, really great album. Not as good as Slave to the Grind, but yeah, I would say 18 to Life is certainly a bit overplayed.
Yeah, I think so. I do really like that song, but yeah, compared to some other tracks off of that album and out of their catalog, probably a little overplayed, a little overrated, but good choices from Chris.
Yeah, I would agree.
We've already heard one of Shane's picks, obviously, because there was the overlap with Bohemian Rhapsody, but what else did he have?
Yeah, so the other two, which I also agree with, number one for him is the song from 3 Days Grace, Animal I Have Become, off of their album 1X from 2006. That one's interesting because I feel like there are several songs off that album that were all overplayed at that point in time. That album was huge. You had some of their other songs like Pain, Never Too Late, Riot, which I felt like were constantly on the radio as well. Good album, good song, but yeah, just it was kind of beat to death for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely one that I can agree that is probably a little bit overplayed.
The other one is definitely overplayed. I would even argue that this might be, looking back on their career now, probably certainly the biggest hit they had, maybe the only real like lasting hit. And that is the song Bodies by Drowning Pool from their album Sinner from 2001.
Yeah, I can't even argue with that. Like,
no.
That song still pumps you up when you hear it. But man, it was
lightning in a bottle for these guys, because none of their other songs even come close to like the level of bodies.
No.
And obviously, unfortunately, their lead singer did pass away prior to the second album, I think, or the next album after this. But yeah, I just, the song Bodies was the theme song from the 2001 SummerSlam for WWE. It was a theme for WWE's ECW from 2005 to 2008, including the one night stand events from 2005 and 2006. One thing I didn't realize looking at Wikipedia on this, and it makes sense, even though it, in hindsight, you're like, come on. I guess it was actually taken off the radio for a while in 2001 after the 9/11 terror attacks.
Bodies hit the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. I forgot that they actually had done that, but not surprising by any means, but yeah, definitely still an overplayed song to this day.
I wish I had saved, because there was a list that was going around because I was working at a radio station in 2001 of songs that, like, we can't play this one for a little while. Like, it's kind of not good at the moment. People are very sensitive. So it did come back, and evidently it came back a little too much because it is ended up on our overrated, overplayed list. But good choices as well. What have you got? Let's see. We have avoided overlap so far, but this could be a good day for it. What have you got for your three?
Yeah. So starting out with mine, a great song, but man, every time I hear it on the radio, I think, why am I hearing this again? Paradise City by Guns N' Roses from the album Appetite for Destruction from 1987.
Yeah. When you think of all the great tracks Guns N' Roses have, and that's the one, like, that to me is like when I close my eyes and think of this track is on WEBN, like that is... That is a radio track, if you've ever heard one, and it has absolutely been run into the ground.
And this is the one that, you know, I was looking at the track list for Appetite for Destruction, and it might be my least favorite song on the album. Mm. Got Welcome to the Jungle, It's So Easy, Night Train, Out to Get Me, Mr. Brownstone, My Michelle, Think About You, Sweet Child of Mine, You're Crazy, Anything Goes, Rocket Queen. Tremendous album.
Yeah.
From track one to the end, but I kind of feel like Paradise City, it's to me, it's the song with like the least amount of teeth. Like it's the least like aggressive on the album. And man, they really played it to death,
which is probably why it got played to death, because probably. It is probably the most mainstream song on that album.
I mean, yeah, it's not maybe to the level of Sweet Child of Mine, but it's like that is kind of the ballad. Then everything else you got. I don't know. This one just feels like stadium rocker. Yeah. And I guess that's why it was such a big deal. But
yeah.
Yeah, I just
totally agree.
Yeah.
Like they have so, like you said, that album has so many great songs on there.
If we're going to have a duplicate, this will be the one.
Okay.
Number two for mine is the song Don't Stop Believing from Journey.
Yeah, we could have, but I did not pick that
from
one.
From their album Escape from 1981.
That's one that I probably should have picked because it is definitely overplayed. And unfortunately, it's another song that became popular in pop culture. Was it Glee or something? Might have
that
done
was one
it.
Of the instances where it kind of was.
The Detroit Red Wings used it a ton, and sports teams still use it. It's still popular because people sing along with like Sweet Caroline, which also could have been on this list, and I didn't pick it. But that's another one that's probably overplayed. But that's Journey has so many great songs, and
another really solid song. I love it. It's a great song. But for whatever reason, when people decided it was okay to like Journey again, because there was that period of time where, you know, you wouldn't really admit that you liked 70s arena rock bands.
Yeah.
Like, that just wasn't cool. Once we all decided it was okay to be a Journey fan, it was like the universe picked Don't Stop Believing as their greatest song of all time. And they just threw it at you from every possible angle. They have so many, if you look at their greatest hits, so many better songs, even with Don't Stop Believing being great, there are better songs out there. Like, can we diversify just a bit?
Yeah, totally agree. That definitely should be one. That would have been an omission from this podcast if one of us hadn't mentioned that one for sure.
So for my number three one, this one, I feel like this one gets unnecessary credit where it doesn't deserve it. The song is Smells Like Teen Spirit from Nirvana.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one because I think how you feel about Nirvana could determine whether you feel like it's worthy of being on the list. Because, again, it has to be something that you do think is a good song. And I do think it's a good song.
I would say it's in their top five songs.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I'm not a huge Nirvana fan, but I like the song.
Yeah.
The problem is I feel like it became kind of the poster child of this is what destroyed hair metal and pop metal and 80s glam rock, like this one song.
Yeah.
Anytime you have a documentary talking about kind of the shift in music taste in the early 90s, they always point to Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit. And I don't know if that's, there are so many other bands that were going in a different direction that, you know, were part of the alternative movement and what became grunge, and that were just hard rock bands that didn't look like hair metal bands. There were so many of those coming into the forefront. I feel like this song got overly propped up as like the big one that changed the universe. And again, it's a good song, but I think maybe it's a bit blown out of proportion.
And I think MTV had a lot to do with that, because that video for that song played almost on endless loop for a good, probably solid year or two on MTV. And I think that also was part of it, because it was taking the video airtime, because at that time MTV, you know, did kind of drive the popular opinion, and they were taking the video airtime away from those bands that kind of disappeared in the early 90s. So I can see why people might mention that almost as taking it personally, because it in a lot of ways became the face of a movement that ended up taking all the videos on MTV. Yeah. Who knew that a few years later there'd be no videos on MTV, but at that moment in time, it did feel like a big deal. But yeah, that's for sure. You know, Nirvana does have better songs, and that is definitely, I don't think their best song. I think it is definitely overrated. So we didn't overlap. I kind of,
that's impressive.
Like I said, I wanted to pick Hotel California, but I was sure somebody would pick that. So in its place, I replaced it with Hungry Like the Wolf from Duran Duran.
Okay.
Like, I love that song.
Great song.
It's a great song, but I feel like it for a while was the one Duran Duran song that got played almost nonstop. And, you know, I was looking to see their album, and of course
Rio is a great album.
Yeah, it is. And you know, that's where I just feel like there are so many other tracks that could have been that big song. And, you know, I don't know that Hungry Like the Wolf is the one that needed to be overplayed, because, you know, you've got Rio, My Own Way, Lonely in Your Nightmare, Hold Back the Rain, New Religion, Last Chance on the Stairway, Save a Prayer, which is great. One of my favorite Duran Duran songs, and The Chauffeur wraps up the album. But, you know, like I said, good song. I just feel like it's a little overdone. It feels like the one Duran Duran song they always go back to. So that's why I picked it.
No, that's totally fair.
We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel. Like, it's off his Stormfront album. That song, it's almost become a meme at this point, because, you know, I think when it was written, it was very creative. It was a really creative way to go through the history of the previous like 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And put them into a song. But as it's gone on and gotten overplay, first off, it's way out of date now, obviously, because it was released in 1989. But it's just, it just doesn't, it almost, I don't want to say it feels lazy now, but when you look back on it, like, it just felt like, maybe not his best songwriting. And that, there's some good stuff on Stormfront. The Downeaster Alexa is a great song. I Go to Extremes is one of his classic live songs.
Great song.
Shameless, Leningrad, and So It Goes to close out the album. Stormfront itself, a really underrated track. But We Didn't Start the Fire, I feel like, overrated. Just,
well, I can't think of it now, not think of one, The Office.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Started the Fire.
Yeah.
Or the occasional thing I'll see on Facebook where someone has a bunch of like PS2 games stacked vertically, and it's like, read the title of these to the tune of We Didn't Start the Fire.
And that's just it. It's become a meme at this point. So, again, brilliant writing at the time, but, you know, I think it's overplayed.
It's tough because for me, like, when I think of that era of Billy Joel is like the modern era of Billy Joel, so to speak.
Yeah.
I just always look at like River of Dreams as being like
that could
have
been
a song that I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah.
But that's more of a, I don't care for the song. We Didn't Start the Fire, yeah, certainly overplayed, and I do like it.
Yeah.
So.
The River of Dreams would have been more maybe the pick had it been one that I don't really care for as much. But Chris pointing out that every time Hungry Like the Wolf played, The Reflex should play twice. Yeah, I totally get on board with that. The Reflex is a great song. And the last one, an album we talked about yesterday, which was Fleetwood Mac's Rumours, Don't Stop. from Rumors.
Please stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a good song, but it just, it was so overplayed. It kind of became the anthem off of the Rumors album. And there's so many other songs off of that album that are so good. I mean, you know, it's one of the few albums you go to and every song has a Wikipedia entry in there. Yeah. And that tells you something. Secondhand News is great. Dreams, Never Going Back Again. Go Your Own Way. Songbird, The Chain. You Make Love and Fun. I Don't Want to Know. Oh Daddy and Gold Dust Woman. Like, I just, Don't Stop is the one song in there that feels like they were trying to write a pop song, like an anthem, like that stadium rock type of song. Yeah,
it's the one we all are really happy playing it live and we're all celebrating, singing along to the chorus, you know.
And you just think a band at a time that just was going through everything they went through to write that album, it feels very phony, honestly, at the time.
They couldn't stop thinking about tomorrow, just hoping it would be better than whatever they were dealing with internally at that point in time, obviously.
For sure. But yeah, those are my overrated, overplayed. A lot of great choices there, a lot of great songs. But again, at some point, some of these songs, these artists have better choices. So please start playing some of those other songs instead of the ones we mentioned on this podcast.
As a follow-up, kind of piggybacking off Chris's comments about the Reflex and Hungry Like the Wolf, what's the best Duran Duran song?
That's a good question. I don't know. Like, I'd have to think about it.
It's tough because you think of like the upbeat Duran Duran songs, and I think like something like Rio is a great song.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, Ordinary World is just a tremendous song.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, potentially as being their best song. I was going to look through their singles.
And obviously, Reflex is great, too. Come Undone.
Like I said, I like Save a Prayer. That's a good song. Yeah. Is There Something I Should Know? Union of the Snake. That's an underrated.
That's a good one, too.
Duran Duran song. New Moon on Monday. Wild Boys. Like
Notorious.
Yeah. I mean, A View to a Kill from that soundtrack in 1985. I mean, they were still releasing hits in the 90s, you know, Serious, Ordinary World, Come Undone, Electric Barbarella all the way in 1997. Yeah. That's a good one. It'd be tough to pick one. Honestly, they're really good and probably underrated as a band.
And Chris mentioning Red Hot Chili Peppers. I was thinking of a few of their songs.
Girls on Film, Mike, or Chris mentioned.
Yeah, but I kind of think with like the Chili Peppers, like their overplayed songs, I'm not really generally that big of a fan of. So because the other song I thought of, and I hate to say it because we're probably going to get around to eventually overrated songs that we don't like.
Yeah.
Seven Nation Army.
Yeah,
I hate
for
that song.
Sure.
I never understood why people like the White Stripes to begin with.
No.
That's just, I never got it.
No, and I get why that song became popular, because just the beat of it in a sports arena, like, but no, the song itself is really bad. Like, we will probably get around to that at some point.
That was the problem with this topic, is that you can't help but let your mind slip to songs that are overrated that you don't like. It's like, no, gotta focus, gotta think about the songs I do like.
But let us know, join the Discord, let us know what songs you don't like, or what songs you do like that maybe are overrated. You can jump in on yesterday's topic as well. I saw Chris put his in the Discord for cover songs, really good stuff there as well. But let us know if you have ideas for things you want us to opine about in this Power Trio. Give us some ideas, and we're happy to try to take them on at the end of this podcast each and every week. But it is time to bring this podcast to a close for this week. Two podcasts in one weekend. A lot of music for you. Please check out both of them. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the one from yesterday, please do check that out. We really appreciate that. And really appreciate everybody who's commented, shared on Facebook. It doesn't cost a dime to do that, but it is so very helpful to our channel. It expands our reach. We really appreciate that. Please drop us a follow on Twitch and on YouTube and everywhere else we are. We really do appreciate that. It helps tremendously. And again, it doesn't cost a dime. Spread the word of the Nerdcast Empire and the Hard Rock Empire. We can continue to do more cool things going forward. Again, we'll be back on Saturday with another episode of the Nerdcast News Report, 8:30 a.m. Saturday morning. And then, of course, next Sunday, we'll be back with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire as we talk about the music from April the 18th. Big thanks to Stove Lake Media for their continued support of the podcast. Big thanks to Chris and to Mike, as always, for putting this all together. And a big thanks to you for listening whenever and wherever you are listening. That's going to wrap things up. We'll be back again next week. And until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.